It's Sunday, and it's time to talk Pirates prospects. This is Future Bucko Talk, and this is Jared Prugar. Thank you, as always, for tuning in on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. It is Mother's Day. The Curve are in Chesapeake, and a lot has gone on with the Altoona Curve over the course of the last week since we talked last week with John Moses, broadcaster and media relations extraordinaire in Altoona. Tremendous show. Thank him, as always, for coming on as they took on the Richmond Flying Squirrels. They split with the Squirrels 3-3, which is impressive given the fact that they got swept by the Squirrels to open up CarMax Park earlier in the season, as they lost all six games during their 12-game skid. But they have turned it up. They're now up to about 8 wins at this time of this recording, which is Friday night. And it's Friday night, and that means Seth Hernandez is on the mound for the Bradenton Marauders, and we'll talk about that later in the show. But, you know, as the weather begins to change and we don't really know what's going on, it's rainy, it's sunny, it's cold, it's wet, it's dry. Well, that's cold and flu season for humans. But for the Altoona Curve roster, they've caught the injury bug, which is honestly worse than the head cold, and it has decimated the Curve pitching staff, which wasn't strong suit for them as it was. Anthony Solometto was put on the IL just a few weeks ago, and he was transferred to the full season injured list with a labral tear in his left shoulder. And that is something that I've had in both of my shoulders, and it is not a good time, no matter what. And I was far from elite as a pitcher. It has taken me a long time for both to get back to even full strength and being willing to do a lot of stuff over your shoulder, let alone throw a baseball 95 miles an hour or a curveball and breaking it off. That's not going to be an easy surgery. He's going to go through a lot of rehab. Hopefully he comes back stronger. Hopefully this is a blessing in disguise to get him to reset his mechanics and things of that nature, just to get back to ground zero and build from the ground up, because he has struggled with the Curve. He was lights out. He came up as a teenager, was doing good things, 20 years old. Things were going well, and then rock bottom hit. He struggled. The struggles were real. Has battled the injury bug quite a few times. And now this one is his most recent setback, and that's just unfortunate for a kid with what seems to be a lot of talent. Just got to be able to harness it in a good way. The Curve released Tyrone Yuley, who had a rough go of it in his outings for the Curve. He was 1-1 with a 14.90 ERA in 7 games. Opponents were hitting .342 off of him, and not just hitting a ton, but they were also walking a ton. He averaged 2.79 walks per hits per inning, and that's never a good situation. Gave up the long ball, gave up 16 runs and 9.2 innings of work for the Curve, and that's just not going to get the job done at AA. He was outright released from his contract on May the 3rd. May the 4th, the force was certainly not with Jesus Castillo. He was the shortstop. He got put on the 7-day injured list. He was removed from Sunday's game for the Altoona Curve, and that was why, which meant that P.J. Hilson came to Altoona from the Indians to give them some more depth. But on the pitching side, Michael Walsh, who started the season on the injured list, is now starting his rehab assignment. And Dominic Piracci was put on the injured list. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh for the Curve pitching staff. That's going to bring left-hand pitcher Nick Domkowski back to Altoona, which is unfortunate for Domkowski, who hasn't played terribly for the Indians. But the Curve just need depth. They just need live arms, and unfortunately, I'm not able to go out and do it anymore. But he's 0-2, 7.34 ERA, and it's tough to evaluate that as a reliever. Now, he started 5 games, and more of a opener role, if I'm not mistaken, for them. But, you know, he had an 8.1 ERA. Opponents are hitting .290 off of him in AAA, so this is nice to get a little bit of a reset for him and just give the Curve some well-needed depth. It's been a rough go of it for these arms, and more help hopefully is along the way. The Curve, I do believe, are going to get into a situation where they're going to be getting what I would hope to be is Jared Jones on a rehab start. Hopefully this next homestand, if my math serves me correct, he would be slated to go probably on Tuesday, depending on how many, you know, how many days they want to go within their rest. He pitched for the Indianapolis Indians. As I pull up his game log here, he pitched for them on May 6th. So that is Thursday, or I'm sorry, that was Wednesday. His start was pushed back due to rain across the Midwest on Tuesday, which would have set him in line with pitching Sunday. I would expect him to be able to throw again on Tuesday here in Altoona. That is certainly the hope. Ben Cherington did mention that he would get a start in Altoona. It would be great to see him there and have another major leaguer. But also, it would just be a nice little bolster to the current pitching staff just for another arm. You know, obviously, this time of year, the injuries are starting to mount, and that's never a good situation when you're already a team that is reeling and desperate to get some wins. Now, they have turned it around. Again, they're as of this recording, they have eight wins, I should say. And I think that's, compared to where they were before, that's tremendous. That means they've got a winning record over their last few games. And that's exactly what the doctor has ordered for Andy Fox's curve. They had, a really good series against Richmond. They started out hot in Chesapeake against the Bay Sox, formerly the Bowie Bay Sox, for those OG Eastern League fans. And then they got met with the injury bug with the arms, and Po Yu Chen again has found his way to the injured list as well. It's another disappointment for what was an electric arm before it came to Altoona for Chen. But now Altoona is tasked with rebuilding its staff. Christian Curtis is still good, which was certainly a good situation. Hunter Whitegriff as well. So, I mean, there are still some depth options and some quality starters, but when you start to lose that depth on the backside, it's never, never a good thing. But, again, that's the way the cookie crumbles. The injury bug's going to get everybody at one point or another. Now it's just, unfortunately, Altoona's turn. There's still a lot of season left here in the first half. And then, of course, you've got the second half as well. It'll be interesting to see how they continue this and what arms they are sent in order to help and what could come next. Obviously, those things aren't quite known at this time. But it will be interesting to kind of see how things go, because it's going to be a dicey situation for a little bit. The battle with Chesapeake, the Curve are at 20 losses on the season, but over that time, since they went 20, or since they lost their first 12 games, they are 9-8, obviously a winning record, and they're in a battle for Chesapeake now. They have, or in potential of tying or losing the series, but could gain some ground on the fifth place Bay Sox, who sit in top of them in the standings with a 13-16 record entering Friday's game. We're recording this as they are playing. The problem for the Curve is they've got a -60 run differential. And when you have those types of arms and they're getting hurt and things are just not going well for your pitching staff and the offense hasn't quite clicked, you get really what's going on with the Curve. And the fortunate thing for them is they're 10-5 in the friendly confines of PNG Park, or PNG Field, I guess I should say. And that's obviously a positive. They got back-to-back homestands coming up, so you look to carry that. And obviously the 3-11 mark away is catapulted by the 0-6 mark at CarMax Park against the Flying Squirrels. But it's not looking great for the Curve pitching staff. Obviously they were struggling mightily going into it. Going into the series against the Bay Sox, and the injuries have continued to pile up, which is never a good sign for them. It'll be interesting to see, again, how they handle that and see what kind of arms are on the way, whether it is a Jared Jones rehab stint where he starts to build up, you know, his repertoire and his way back from his injury and Tommy John surgery. He threw 3 innings in Indianapolis. He has thrown 3 innings. He threw 3 innings in Bradenton. I would expect him to build that up in his next start, potentially get to 5 or 6 innings, hopefully, is the goal. he gave up one run and on five hits against Omaha on Wednesday, May 6th. So, I mean, things are looking good for him. He had a 3 ERA in that outing. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where they're going with Jared Jones. But the good news is he is healthy and he's on the track back to Pittsburgh. And we're going to talk about everything else going on in the organization here when we come back after we take a quick little break. Do you ever get this sense of deja vu? And it seems like this, and it seems like I've talked about this every show, but it's worth mentioning every show because Seth Hernandez continues to do Seth Hernandez things. You know, the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, and Seth Hernandez absolutely shoves in the Florida State League. His ERA is lower than gas prices, which is obviously not hard at this point, honestly, but it is below one after his tremendous outing Friday night for the Marauders. He, without knowing whether he's going to get the win or not at the time of this recording, he is 2-0 with a 0.96 ERA. 0.96. That is absolutely incredible. You can get two hot dogs at Sheetz for more than his ERA is if it was money. He's at 50 Ks, which averages out to be about 1.8 Ks per inning per game. He's at 28 innings pitched, and he is just absolutely torching the Florida State League. And let's be real. The Florida State League is the rawest of the leagues for the pitchers and the hitters. There's a lot to be learned in the Florida State League and in Bradenton and throughout it, but he is just absolutely rising to the occasion and just a dominant force for a kid that's just a year from graduation. You know, I mean, this is a kid that, you know, he was a senior last year. This is just absolutely incredible for Seth Hernandez, who looks to be the next in line of an absolutely killer pitching staff for the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. So he would be great, and he would be in a great addition to the Altoona curve. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but I don't know what else he's got to prove in the Florida State League. He's now up to six innings. So the pitch count's right where it needs to be. Six innings. If you get six innings from your starter, you're in a tremendous spot. He's being efficient. He, again, 50 Ks and 28 innings pitched is just absolutely phenomenal. He was the pitcher of the month for the month of April. And Bradenton, he's ready to go. I think he's ready for Greensboro. He's definitely ready, I think, for the Sally League, for the South Atlantic League. Selfishly, for my content purposes, would be great to get him into Altoona and see what he can do against double-A hitters at this point, because let's be real, what else has he got to prove in Bradenton other than maybe getting his tan on and just going out there and being effective? And I think that's great. You know, the Pirates organization showed they're willing for certain players to push them through if they're good enough. And Paul Skeens is a rare find. He was already fairly polished coming out of college, out of LSU, where he's just all around great player for the LSU Tigers. But you know, he pitches a little bit in Bradenton and he pitches a couple games there in Double A and then gets a cup of tea really in Triple A last year to start the season, and then poof, he's in, or 2 years ago, I guess I should say now, and poof, he's in Pittsburgh by nearly this time. So, I mean, it's just one of those times where now, hey, what else can you do? And for pitchers, it's tough because there are only so many pitches you got in that arm of yours, and he's just showing some absolutely electric stuff. I would love to see it in Altoona hopefully soon. I would definitely imagine it'll be here by the summertime, and hopefully away from this cold, dreary weather that we've been experiencing here in central Pennsylvania. He's not the only one that's been lighting it up in Bradenton. Murph Gray, a guy we talked about as well, he's the Florida State Player of the Week for his performance against the Lakeland Flying Tigers. 10 for 22, two home runs, eight RBIs in six games. Just absolutely incredible for Murph Gray, who looks to be a guy that could play the corners and play them rather well. I think that's if there's a black hole for the Pirates, and we're going to talk about them later in the show, that third base area, Nick Gonzalez has played it pretty well. Jared Triolo obviously has a gold glove there as a utility guy. So, I mean, it's coming around, but if you can get a third baseman that can hit, obviously you see what happens. And I think that's something that the Pirates are going to keep an eye on. I wouldn't expect to see him in Altoona at this point this year, or maybe towards the end of the season, but he certainly will be in Greensboro coming up on the second half of the year. Speaking of Greensboro, Axioplaz has been on fire for them as a catcher for the Greensboro Grasshoppers. He has had a pretty solid come of it here lately for them. In 24 games, he's averaging an RBI per game, and I think that's obviously something that you want to do. You talk about situational baseball, situational hitting, and whenever you're able to get an RBI a game, I think that's a really good situation to be in if you're Axioplaz. You know, he's hitting .340, has 3 stolen bases, 3 home runs, 12 runs scored, and 97 at-bats for the Grasshoppers. And, you know, I think it's a great opportunity. He's playing catcher. He's playing a little bit of first base and DHing. So his bat's in the lineup consistently. But, you know, he's played 12 games at catcher, 6 at first base. So he's playing a catcher position predominantly, doing well there. So, I mean, it's a good situation to be in for him. He's doing well. And I think that's exactly what the Pirates need. You know, it's the catcher position, outside of Henry Davis, who's starting to turn it around a little bit with the stick, you know, isn't great depth wise. You know, you look at Joey Bart is kind of the redheaded stepchild, if you will, of the organization right now. You either love him or you hate him. He turned it around in the second half last year, but people aren't that patient anymore, especially as the Pirates continue to have success. The NL Central was a wide-open race. All 5 teams are playing competent baseball, even if you include the Cincinnati Reds, who are on a pretty rough skid. But, you know, with that window being open to potentially make the playoffs in the postseason in Pittsburgh, that patience has run out, and I think that's something that you kind of have to tread lightly with. Another guy that's hitting pretty well right now is Jared Jones. Jared Jones is not the pitcher, the hitter. Has gotten 88 at-bats, .284, 2 home runs, 10 RBIs, so things are starting to turn around for him as well, and it'll be interesting to kind of see how that goes for him. That, you know, the slash line is .284, .366 on base percentage. He's slugging .398. He's got 2 home runs, 4 doubles, and 10 RBIs while walking twice. So, I mean, he's playing some better baseball. You can see the marked improvement. He played in 15 games, got 50 at-bats with Greensboro last year after being drafted. Struck out 26 times in those games. Managed 4 home runs, 8 RBIs, and 6 walks. So everything is improving. Obviously, he's playing more. He's played more games. Obviously, the sample size is a little higher, but he's shown that he can adapt now. Again, I think things are going to go well for him. And that's a really good spot to be in. But right now, I think the worry for the Pirates is in Indy. We talk about organizational depth all the time, and that's something that the Pirates, I think, have done a really good job at building over the last few years, because that organizational depth at certain positions hasn't really been there. At catcher, it was supposed to be Henry Davis and Andy Rodriguez, and Andy Rodriguez has just battled a myriad of injuries, and he's starting to turn things around at the plate. I think that's a really good situation and spot for him to be in. But after that, you've got Abraham Gutierrez, you have Plaz and Greensboro. You have Omar Alfonso and Sean Ross here in Altoona. So, I mean, the depth at catcher isn't great. Middle infield, though, that's where you have some strength right now in the major league level. You've got Nick Gonzalez, who's a utility guy. You got Jared Triolo, who's a utility guy. You've got Nick York and Billy Cook, who are utility guys. But you don't have that everyday second baseman, right? And that guy was supposed to be Termar Johnson. But Termar Johnson is struggling mightily in AAA. Absolutely struggling mightily. And that is not a good sign for the young Johnson. You know, he is right now sitting .167. His on-base plus slugging is .476. You know, he's stolen 5 bases, which is a positive, but he's got 17 hits and 102 RBIs,
102 at-bats, but it's just not going well for him at second base. Obviously, with Connor Griffin holding down the shortstop position for a long time, that second base job is wide open, and you kind of gotta figure that out here for the, if you're the Indians, because it's just anybody's ball game. And I think when you have that opportunity and you're not taking advantage of it, it's a rough spot to be in. And I don't know what's next for them depth wise or how long they're gonna make it for Tomar, because for a guy that they took in the first round, fourth overall in 2022, you know, he's still, you know, only 21. So there's a lot of room for growth still, but you know, he's got to figure it out. And AAA is not easy. You're playing major leaguers more often than not, guys that have had more than a cup of tea, guys that are itching and burning to get back to the big leagues. So, I mean, there's some room for a lot of room for growth for him. The power has been non-existent, and he's not a power guy. He's 5'7", 201. You know, he's not a guy that's going to hit a lot of dingers. He's only got he's got 43 in his minor league career. He hit 9 all last year in Double A in Altoona. He's boosted largely because his home run stats for playing in Greensboro. Greensboro is obvious, as we've said this multiple times, a launch pad. And he hit, you know, he's hit 18 of his 43 home runs in Greensboro. So, or with the Grasshoppers. So, I mean, there's a lot of room for growth for Tomar. You hope that he can kind of turn it around and fix this season, but it'll be interesting to see what they do with him. Again, he's only 21, so he's not necessarily at a point where you can give up on him, or should you give up on him, but they, you know, maybe he becomes a trade piece. Maybe he becomes a guy that, you know, you figure out who you can get and see if maybe things will work out in another organization. He's still young. Again, drafted in 2022 out of high school. What's next for Tomar? Can he turn it around? I think that he has the potential to do it. It's about getting comfortable and getting after it there at the AAA level. And that's not an easy place to get it together. And I think when you have a lot of situations like that, it's never easy, but can you figure it out on the fly? AAA, you know, we talk about this as well. They're pitchers, they're major league arms. So when you're going up against major league arms, you're trying to kind of figure things out. And, you know, that's not always easy to do. They're professional pitchers, obviously, that it's professional baseball, but these are guys that have been around the block. These are guys that have potentially played in the major leagues, potentially done a lot of things like that. So, I mean, it's just one of those situations. You got an opportunity there to take advantage of it. And hopefully he's up for that challenge, or it's going to be one of those opportunities that's wasted. And I'm not sure where they're going to go with it, but no, Tomar's got some serious talent. I mean, he showed that. He's shown some flashes of brilliance with the curve. Tremendous with the glove, but can the bat play? And is he willing to do that and step that up? And at 5'7", in a Jose Altuve mold, you got to be able to hit the baseball, right? Somebody's always going to be bigger, stronger, faster, but can you get on base? And can you be productive in the lineup? And that's something that the Pirates are going to have to figure out. And right now, he's got to figure it out too if he wants to continue up that track and make it to the major leagues sometime in the not-so-distant future. We're going to talk about those Buccos after we take this quick break and we wrap up Future Bucco Talk. Those battling Buccos are absolutely playing some pesky baseball recently. Connor Griffin is coming of age. Now that he's 20, it seems like he can play the freaking game with ease. He is absolutely torching the National League right now. The Pirates swept the Cincinnati Reds last weekend and then had an off day, which, of course, then they lay an egg against Arizona to start their series, lose 9-0, and it was just ugly from the beginning of that one, but they turned it around to win 2 out of 3. Paul Skeens did Paul Skeens things against the Diamondbacks, and he just absolutely dismantled their entire lineup, as he does to pretty much everybody except the St. Louis Cardinals. I think they're the only team that he struggles against, which is very odd, but it is what it is, and he'll get some opportunities against the Cardinals sometime in the near, not-so-distant future as well. But, I mean, it's just one of those situations, right? Paul Skeens is Paul Skeens. They win a game 1-0. He's had more shutout starts than most have in their career, and he's only in year three. They win again on Thursday. They got late-night Buccos throughout this weekend as they are in San Francisco to take on the Giants before returning home to host the Rockies in Philly. So, unfortunately, the Pirates and the Curve are going up against each other as far as being at home, but then they get another chance at the Cardinals. Those Buccos are playing some seriously tough baseball, and I think when you're able to do that, I mean, this is a dangerous team. They're 21-17 as of this recording. That's good for third in the NL Central. They were in last, but Cincinnati has gone from first to last. I think we kind of understood that the Cincinnati Reds were fake, and I mean, they weren't a first place team. They were lucking out in a lot more ways than one, and the Pirates kind of exposed that with that sweep, and then they have struggled against the Chicago Cubs. So the Cubs essentially flipped, and now it's the Cubs, Cards, Buccos, and the Brewers before the Reds round it out. That 21-17 record would be good for second in the NL East. That would be good for third in the NL West. That would be good for third in the AL East. That would be ahead in the AL Central and the AL West. The Pirates are playing some really good baseball, and they're playing some really good baseball against teams with winning records. While the teams that they played, or the teams that the NL Central has played, haven't quite lived up to that moniker. Obviously, the Reds, the biggest frauds that we've seen so far this season. But this is a team now with a year under Donnie Kelly. The anniversary of Derek Shelton's firing just came and passed. And if you would have talked to me last year about this team being 21-17, five games back of first in the NL Central, of course, this is a year where the NL Central is one of the best divisions in all of Major League Baseball, I probably would have taken that. Would I have believed that Connor Griffin was playing big league baseball at that point in time? No. Probably not, just given how teams or the Pirates pull up guys. But he's here. He's here, and to quote the meme, he's here and he's perfect, right? He's playing some really good baseball. The Pirates are getting some really good baseball out of their role players, and I think that's good. You can still work on the outfield defense, which is among the worst in all of baseball. I think there are some high school outfielders that are probably a lot more quality than what the Pirates play between O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds, but they're winning baseball games in spite of that lack of success defensively. It's just a good situation for them to be in, and right now I think they're in a good spot. It's funny to see all the talent come through and see what you got. You're getting some good innings out of Mitch Keller. You're getting some good innings out of everybody in the rotation, really. I mean, the bullpen's got to pull some things together here and there, but Paul Skeens is doing Paul Skeens things. Bubba Chandler's got to work on some things here. The control is probably a concern, but even with that, he's still doing a really good job of minimizing a lot of damage. Bubba's a very good arm, a very good young arm, and I think you just got to let him figure it out, and I think he's going to, you know, despite the inflated walks. It is what it is, but that's just, you know, one of those deals. He struggled against the Cardinals. Against the Diamondbacks, but again, you know, you're going to have those moments, but it's all about how you respond, and half the battle is that response piece, is when you're faced with adversity, can you overcome it? And I think Bubba Chandler is perfectly capable of that. He knows that. He's a tremendous guy if you talk to him, and I think, you know, when you look at it like that, there's plenty of opportunities for him to go and do some really good things. So, I mean, I think the Pirates are in a really good spot. You know that Jared Jones is coming back. Carmen Majinski is doing a really good job for his role. So you just got to keep it rolling and keep hoisting the cone, if you will. It's crazy to me that just a faux pas by Fanatics has led to one of the craziest trends in all of professional baseball with hoisting the parking cones. Everybody's got to get bucko fever, and that fever includes stealing traffic cones. People, you know, you got to love it. It's a great time when the Pirates are winning baseball games. You can feel it throughout the organization. The vibes are good, and, you know, they got to keep it rolling. Again, this is now we're essentially year two of Donnie Kelly. Can they continue to win games under him? Can he continue to grow as a manager? You know, those are all things that we're going to figure out here as you go, because you don't know. And that's the beauty of baseball and the beauty of the Pirates. There's a lot we don't know. They're a young team. They're full of energy. They're full of cones. It'll be interesting to kind of see where they go from here. But before we wrap it up, I'd like to send a special shout out to all the moms here that support baseball players, that take you to the games, take you home, wash your jerseys, take you out for dinner after you strike out three times, or take you out to dinner after you hit your first home run. This episode is dedicated to all the moms out there. My wife, my mom, and every other mom who tunes in and is a supportive sports parent and parent in general. It's not easy during these times, but we all do it, and we all hope that our moms are proud of us everywhere we go. So, moms, this one was for you. Thanks for tuning in. This was Future Bucko Talk with Jared Prugar.